Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Feature film and television actor Charlie Sheen recently confessed that he is no longer interested in maintaining a conventional and or traditional style relationship with a woman, but rather he is now engaged in a lifestyle that includes living and sleeping with two women, which he refers to as his goddesses. Sheen has mentioned that he has no desire whatsoever to get married again. And for years, Playboy founder and chief editor Hugh Hefner has been known to be engaged himself in sexual relations with two, three, or even four or more women at a time. Hefner's popular term, Playboy, has become synonymous with a man who seems to have it all, and particularly the skillful art of managing a multiplicity of romantic and sexual partners while fully indulging in an active polyamorous social lifestyle. Are there any ethics or values that should be maintained when a man has two or more sex partners? Are there certain attributes that a man should develop and enhance in order to find himself worthy of the romantic and sexual companionship of two or more women? My guest this evening has developed a reputation over the past decade or so for being an enthusiastic proponent of the polyamorous lifestyle and open relationships, and he has slowly but surely become one of the most highly sought after and well-respected dating coaches and seduction gurus in North America, Europe, and many other countries all over the world. Who is this man who heads up the Worthy Playboy Institute and, similar to the aforementioned Sheen, has an affinity for adult film actresses and strippers? His real name is Phil, but to his thousands of loyal fans, he is known simply as Johnny Soporno. And tonight, Johnny Soporno is going to open up about his most interesting way of life and a number of his unique philosophies and principles as he chooses to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God.
You're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman. But the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo! Mode One! This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode One! let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha! Allen Roger Curry. Gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Allen Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Allen Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, March 10th, and tonight's discussion should be very, very, very interesting. Yeah, my guest for the evening, he's established himself as one of the top dating coaches, mentors, seduction gurus in the world, and he is totally in favor of polyamorous dating. For those of you who don't know what that means, you've never heard that term before, anytime you are in favor of, say, open relationships, having multiple partners, swinging, couple swapping, that type of thing, all of that falls in the category of polyamorous dating. And yes, my guest tonight is a major proponent of polyamorous dating, and he has helped a lot of guys overcome their shyness towards approaching women, to approach women more effectively, and attract what he refers to as professionally beautiful women. So it should be a very interesting, provocative, dynamic conversation that will get started in a little bit. Next week, I will be interviewing a woman by the name of Carrie Cohen Hoffman. Carrie Cohen Hoffman, she wrote a book about promiscuity and her experiences as a promiscuous woman. And so we will be talking about, is sexual promiscuity just a stigma for women? A lot of women have complained to me about the infamous double standard that society presents them with, that men basically have a green light to be promiscuous, but women don't. So that's going to be the theme of next week's discussion. I look forward to that one. Then 2 weeks from now, I will be having a discussion with a woman who's considered one of the pioneers of erotic adult films for women. Her name is Candida Royal. Candida Royal. She will be my guest in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from tonight, I will be chatting it up with her. Now, I got love for all my listeners, but particularly, you know, I got love for my chat room listeners. That's right. Who's in my chat room right now? I got a number of guests in my chat room. Number of guests. If you ever want to register so you can contribute to the chat room discussion, you can go to the main page of Blog Talk Radio and register a username, and then you will be able to contribute to the chat room discussion. But of those who do have usernames, I got the Wolf Howls. The Wolf Howls. I know the Wolf Howls. He's a supporter of Mode 1. That's right. I got not other people guided, not misguided, but self-guided is in my chat room. I got London Lesnar.
She listens all the way from London, England. That's right. She's become one of the most enthusiastic and loyal fans of Upfront and Straightforward. She's in my chat room. I got Jiggy79 is in my chat room. I got James C. Jimmy in my chat room. I got Christian Davis in my chat room. I got Brandon Petrillo in my chat room. Mo One. And I got, last but not least, Big Dog 83. Big Dog 83 is in my chat room, and I'm sure I will be joined by quite a few others in my chat room for Upfront and Straightforward. More special shout-outs will be my brother and Ace Confidant, Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry. Him and my sister-in-law, Angie, they took me out to dinner a week ago. A week ago today was my birthday. That's right. I turned 39 again. I mean, golly, it's just ridiculous. I just keep turning 39 every year. Every year I just am stuck at 39. But, yeah, I had lobster and shrimp, no chicken wings. I did have some peach snapple. I love chicken wings and peach snapple. But much love to my older brother and my sister-in-law, Angie. My cousin, J.P. Jones in Chicago. My other cousin, Arthur Barr in Maplewood, New Jersey. My other cousin, Christopher Curry in Detroit, Michigan. Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin Van Pulliam III, EVP3, whose mother makes the absolute best peach cobbler like ever. That's right. And No Hand, a.k.a. Metal Hayes, Vanessa Turner, Edie Lee Harris, Don Calypso, Mel Hopkins, Kathy Holloway Hill, Chad Hunter. The NBA is becoming more and more interesting. It's becoming more and more interesting. That's right. The Bulls overtook the Heat for second place in the Eastern Conference, but the Miami Heat just had an exciting victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, they had lost five straight, but they broke that streak by beating the L.A. Lakers 94-88. That was a great game tonight. Yes. Speaking of basketball, did you see the end of the NCAA game where St. John's played Rutgers and the guy threw the ball into the audience with like 1.7 seconds left and the referees just left? That's kind of fucked up, man. I mean, if you're the team that lost, if you're Rutgers, you want that chance to score a last-second shot. And they never got that chance because the referees just, like, left. That's a trip. I read about this woman named Tara Myers. She used to be a porn star in the 80s. And she became a teacher. And she ended up feeling, I don't know if she was forced to quit her job or she just chose to quit her job. Some reports saying she was kind of forced to take an indefinite administrative leave. Others say she, on her own volition, chose to quit because she didn't want a media circus. Anyway, it made news. What are your thoughts about that? Should she be criticized for doing porn 15 to 20 years ago if she enjoys being a teacher? This happened in St. Louis. On the same subject, sex, Northwestern University, the big controversy was the professor J. Michael Bailey held a demonstration where this woman named Faith Crow allowed her fiance to use a vibrator on her, and she was getting off. And first, Northwestern University backed him up, but then the next day, the president was like, I think that was disgusting. I think it was inappropriate judgment. Hey, he allowed the students who were going to feel uncomfortable about it to leave. So I don't get it. Where's the controversy? As long as he didn't force any of the students to watch it, as long as he didn't obligate any students to watch it, where's the controversy? Some people say, well, it didn't represent academic learning. Hey, some guys in there might not know how to use a vibrator on a woman. So I would assume that they learn. But yeah, you know, sex, people are just so prudish about sex, and we treat sex still like that taboo subject. Now, I read a report that says feminism has created a generation of baby, coddled, immature, and even effeminate men. Wow. Now, there's been a lot of episodes on Blog Talk Radio where people have talked about just that, that a lot of men nowadays, young men are being, you know, effeminate. Yeah, it says that feminism has backfired because it's created generation of babied men, coddled men, immature men, irresponsible men, and even effeminate men. One of my chat room listeners, he says, feminism is misunderstood. Yeah, I misunderstand what was the purpose. Now, the way I see feminism, you know, they wanted to get equal pay in the workplace and didn't want to be treated like second-class citizens. I'm all about that. But I don't know. Some things have now worked so much in some women's favor that, I don't know, it's just created a lot of animosity between the two genders. But that's my own opinion. I'm sure some people would disagree. And of course, well, before I get to the big news of the last couple weeks, some people have entered my chat room. I got Neo X Rio is in my chat room. My guest for the evening is in my chat room. I won't say his name just yet. Eric is in my chat room. I got Diva 362636. Diva had the nerve to criticize me. She said, Alan, how you going to have a good show next week when you know the NCAA tournament started? I told her she was one of only 1,000 women in the country that care about the NCAA tournament. But she has been pushing for me to promote her as my number one most loyal listener over Hyper, and I ain't seen Hyper in 2 or 3 weeks. So right now, I'm going to call her 1A and Hyper 1B. She's 1A as far as loyal listenership, Adrian, Diva 362636, and I got the angel of Generation Y Radio. But, you know, all what's been the news, in the news, you know what's been in the news, oh my goodness. I'm gonna just let you hear for yourself what's been the topic of the news.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
It's oftentimes says unknown, but occasionally, you know, a giant marquee name comes through on your caller ID and it's like, winning.
Winning, Charlie Sheen, baby, winning.
Is coming off as erratic.
Right,
to people.
Well, you borrow my brain for 5 seconds and just be like, dude, can't handle it. Unplug this bastard, yeah, because it fires in a way that is, I don't know, maybe not from this particular terrestrial realm, you know? When you got tiger blood and Adonis DNA, man, it's like, Get with the program, dude. You've been given magic. You've been given gold.
Okay, last I checked, Haim, I've spent, I think, close to the last decade, I don't know, effortlessly and magically converting your tin cans into pure gold. And the gratitude I get in this is this charlatan chose not to do his job, which is to write. I'm sorry, man. I got magic and I got poetry at my fingertips, and I'm, you know, at most of the time, and this is, you know, this includes naps. You know, I'm an F-18, bro, and I will destroy you in the air, and I will deploy my ordnance to the ground. I have a disease. Bullshit. I cured it with my brain, with my mind. I'm cured. I'm done.
Charlie Sheen, man. Hey, you know, I've never been into drug use. I've never done cocaine in my life. I've never been a heavy drinker. I'm more of a social drinker. So when it comes to the substances, I'm not a fan of those. But there's a lot of things that Charlie Sheen said that I actually agreed with, like when he was talking about honesty.
Let's just hang on right here.
It's no secret that you have an affinity for porn stars.
Well, I mean, wow, listen to that statement.
Why?
Well, look at what they do. Look at what I do. Duh.
You know, you say duh, but I don't get it. What is it?
It's exciting, it's fun, and you already know what you're getting before you meet them.
Because you've watched them.
No, because I'm guessing right. Well, of course. What's not to watch? are the best at what they do, and I'm the best at what I do, and together it's like, it's on. Sorry, Middle America. Yeah, I said it.
It's also well documented that Sheen often prefers to pay for the company of women.
Is it the same for prostitutes? Is it that it's good sex?
Yeah, who wants to deal with all the small talk and nonsense? And so you're paying for something that eliminates that. And I don't know. It makes sense to me. As long as you're not lying to anybody. As long as you're not lying to people. I think whatever you do and there's no children involved, then you're okay. But people are going to judge it because they're so jealous and they're doing it behind closed doors. And it's like, really, dude? Really?
Do you all sleep in the same bed together? Can I take that one? Definitely not. Only because three is too many for a bed. Everybody and each one of us needs an inside, and there's only two ends on a bed, you know, but it's never an issue.
We all just land wherever we land. We try not to make rules or plans or anything like that.
Do you want to marry Charlie?
Too soon to tell.
I would love to marry Charlie.
I'm 0-3 with the marriage thing, so being a ball player.
Charlie, now see, if you caught that one stretch, he said, I'm not into lying to women. Hey, I'm totally about that. You know, that's why my show is upfront and straightforward. I don't like the lying, and I don't like, if you read Mo 1, you notice the first sentence in my first chapter is, I don't like small talk. He said he doesn't like small talk. So me and Charlie Sheen do have that in common. But here, finally, is my favorite. When the interviewer asked him, was he bipolar?
Some are saying that you're bipolar.
Wow, what does that mean?
I guess that, you know, you're on two ends of the spectrum.
Wow, and then what? What's the cure? Medicine? Make me like them? Not going to happen. I'm bi-winning. I win here and I win there. Now what? If I'm bipolar, aren't there moments where a guy like crashes and like in the corner like, oh my God, it's all my mom's fault? Shut up. Shut up. Stop. Move forward.
Man, that's classic by winning. I'll be right back to get this discussion going. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Kanahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. So I'm getting treated for
my sex appeal. This is Nikki Shroom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. My guest for the evening heads up what is known as the Worthy Playboy Institute. And he works closely with a previous guest of mine, Zon Perion. I hope I pronounced it right, but yeah, I had Zon. Some people call him Zan, Zon Zan. But yeah, he was on my show a couple years ago. He has, over the last 5-10 years or so, have established himself as one of the top dating coaches, mentors, dating advisors, seduction gurus in the entire world. He's had events here in the United States, Canada, Europe, other countries. His popularity is gaining and gaining every year, and I'm glad to have him on my show so we can chop it up, talk game. So on behalf of Upfront and Straightforward and the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network, listeners, give it up for Johnny Saporno.
Thank
Johnny
you so,
Saporno.
So much. It feels great to be here, and I had no idea your audience was so loud.
Hey, my audience, my listeners are enthusiastic, and they love all the guests I have, as long as they keep it real and they're upfront and straightforward. And yes, this is a interview and discussion that has been recommended to me for a while. I'd get different notes from time to time. Guys say, you should have Johnny Saporno on your show. And
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt, but I was going to say, I've been at least a dozen people a year have been telling me I have to get on your show and get to meet with you and speak with you, and I've wanted to, just haven't been able to get it together until now, and I'm delighted that we have. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so, well, since I've played all these audio clips, I'm going to start off asking you about, now, you were active on my Facebook page today, and you mentioned that you've actually had in-person conversation with Charlie Sheen before. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, but that was long, long ago. I would fairly routinely run into Charlie at the Rainbow Grill, which is next to the Roxy on Sunset Boulevard, for those Los Angelinos who might be listening. And we would hang out because I was there usually with a bunch of porn starlets and Vivid Contract girls and porn actors, and he would invariably come over and schmooze his way in because they loved him, and he was always very playful and a bright guy with a great sense of humor. But as I said on my comment on your wall, I can't really remember anything particularly significant that we'd ever spoken about. I'm not 100% sure he would recognize me on the street if not for my fairly obvious right, with devil horns. Otherwise, I think that I would pass by his world without making a blip at the moment.
Now, speaking of that, how frequently do you, because I noticed, like, it seemed like no less than 3 out of every 5 pictures I see you in, if not more, you had these little devil horns. Is that your, like, normal MO to wear those things, or just for different parties, or what?
No. I mean, I'll put it in this context. Generally speaking, when people ask me why I have horns on my head, I say because they were cheaper than a hair transplant and much less stupid-looking. And that usually gets the girls laughing. But the truth is, whenever the weather is good and I'm out socially and I've got no particularly good reason not to be wearing them, for example, I'm not heading over to some child's baby naming ceremony or to a funeral, then I throw them on my head and wander around and have a good time because they're pretty much a fully guaranteed conversation piece.
Okay. Now, Charlie Sheen recently said that the reason he prefers porn stars is as romantic companions is because you know what you're getting ahead of time. I take it he means he knows they can fuck real good. now, you're known for, as you've already mentioned, for hanging around a lot of porn stars. What's your thoughts on his comment, and what's your own thoughts on interacting with adult film and actresses?
Thank you for a great question. The simple answer is, anyone who does anything for a living, anyone who's a professional at something, will tend to be a whole lot better at it than people who do it casually or for fun. Mm-hmm. Amateur means for the love of it. Literally, that's from which the original Latin it comes from, for the love of it. Professionals, whether they're professional hairstylists, professional medical doctors, professional lawyers, massage therapists, or escorts, whatever a person is doing in which ostensibly they've hung a shingle that says, this is what I do it very well, well enough, that you'd be wiser to pay me to solve your problem than to try and do it on your own. And anyone in this category of professional has to display a certain quality of professionalism in order to get repeat business and word-of-mouth recommendations. And I can tell you that porn stars, who are also in most cases available as very, very high-priced escorts, tend to be extremely good at what they do, in part because they're hired to satisfy a man's fantasy as well as simply getting him off, and because they have to be performance artists, both physically and psychologically, but more than anything, they aren't necessarily enjoying their portion of the work, so they learn how to be very good at making it over fast. In other words, most porn stars are very talented at doing things to get a guy to a point where he is extremely satisfied very quickly, because most guys, frankly, just don't take very long anyway. Having studied the various marital arts over my many years, considering myself a marital arts expert, and having various black belts in things like Kung Fu and Krav Maga and a few other fairly obscure things, I can tell you that women who are any good in bed sure do appreciate it when men are any good in bed. When it comes to porn stars, if the guy is any good in bed and not overwhelmed by their beauty or their presence or their sexuality, and the girls are actually into the guy, then it's as though we're not just having a casual passing, but literally making beautiful music together in the sense of a jazz ensemble. Each person comes in and does what they do with a great groove, with just the right quality of repetition versus changing around, and the sex is fantastic. And I expect at this point, Charlie has had plenty of opportunity to become jaded with regards to beautiful women, and I imagine he's spent enough time Charlie is in a different category in terms of his number of partners because he's extremely famous and because he's happy to pay for it. So I think he's in the 5,000 partners echelon. At this point, I imagine he's gotten to be pretty good at what he does. So he's got the problem of if he goes to bed with an amateur girl and he's good in bed and does the things he can do well, she's going to follow him around a lot. And if he's not that into her, that will make him crazy. Whereas it's very unlikely that's going to be the result if he goes to bed with someone who's truly a professional at sex. In fact, the odds are good they'll just really have a great time, and it will be equally great for him as it is for her. So on behalf of all men who are prepared to put in the time and effort to actually become any good at sex, it's critically important to remember that once you are really good at it, since even if you're 5% better than average, you're probably going to be the best lay she's ever had because average is so drastically terrible. So you're going to end up with having an awful lot of girls who are highly disappointed by most men, and when they're happy with you, they're going to follow you around. Because women...
When you say follow, you're talking about stalking.
No, I don't mean it so much as stalking. I mean it more in the sense of... There was a great joke when I was a kid. It was, what was the difference between a teenage girl and a toilet seat? And the answer was, when you toss your load into a toilet, it doesn't follow you around for 8 weeks.
Oh, damn. That's deep. Okay.
It goes along with another comment I've always liked, that is that women are a lot like linoleum floors. If laid properly at the outset, you can walk all over them for a lifetime.
Okay, well, let me ask you about hooking up with porn stars. Being personal, have you, when you've had sex with women who are adult film actresses,
mm-hmm.
do you pay for their companionship, or you just charm them to the point where you don't have to pay?
Okay.
Or a little bit of both?
The answer in brief is I've never been able to afford to pay and never really had the interest. There's only one reason I don't believe for myself in paying for sex, and that's because my goal when hooking up with a girl is to truly delight her. And if I'm paying a girl to be there, then the only way I can truly delight her is by paying her more. It sounds like a losing proposition. I have an awful lot of playmates who are in the sex trade, but we always hook up on a strictly for pleasure arrangement. In fact, I'm meticulous about this. If I feel a girl that I've just done a favor for, if I've done something to help someone out, and she tries to come on to me because she wants to pay me back for this good thing, I'll tell her straight out. I'll say, listen, hon, I really appreciate it, but I need you to understand that for me, I only want you coming to bed with me because it's something you want to do because you think you're going to have a good time. Because if you want to come to bed with me because you feel you want to reward me for it, for something I've done, it makes me feel like I've paid for it, and I won't have any satisfaction. So the secret, and I'll make this very clear to everybody, the secret to hooking up with professional porn stars, with escorts, whatever, women who get paid to be beautiful and get paid to be sexy and, in fact, get paid to have sex. The most important thing you can do is offer them non-judgmental acceptance. Just be accepting of what they do, why they do it, with no judgment. Treat them as a person. Like them or not based on who they are and not what they do. Because giving them this kind of acceptance is so profoundly unusual for them, they'll pay tremendous attention. And then if you actually do enjoy them, and you're having a good time with them, and they know it, suddenly they think, wow, this is actually a person. This is a guy that likes me for who I am. He doesn't condemn me for being a porn star. He's also not falling all over himself trying to get to me because I'm a porn star. He's treating me as a person. And if you could encourage any of these women to accept themselves as well, so that they unburden themselves with all sorts of sociological and societal guilt that they've taken on that is most of the time totally unjust, so that they stop suffering needlessly and they feel empowered. They will look at you as an emancipator. They'll look at you as a person who has just liberated them. And this has a profound effect, because when the woman thinks about the opportunity of hooking up with some guy who gets it, some guy who doesn't condemn her for her sexuality, doesn't condemn her for being comfortable with having sex without any commitment or strings or guarantee of security or any of the things that women have been raised to believe they need to have. When she realizes that you exist and she's thinking to herself, wow, this is amazing. I'd love to have sex with someone who doesn't feel the need to own me, doesn't feel the need to curtail my experiences around him, doesn't feel the need to put me into a box or to look at me for not being in a box and condemn me for it. Wow, that's wonderful. If only there were more guys like this. And then she goes, well, at least there's one guy, and I'm looking at him. And this has played out extremely well for me and for most of the guys I've taught this to.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you. You got involved in a thread on my Facebook page today where you made a strong statement, and this also correlates to Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen said in his interview recently, he said he's been married 3 times. He feels like he's 0-for-3. And he said he doesn't think a traditional marriage will ever work for him again. And as you know, it's been reported, he now lives with, as he refers to them as, the goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
One matter of fact, one of his goddesses or partners is either a current or former porn star. But yeah, you made a strong statement. You were really just crucifying the idea of being married. So let me ask you, first, I guess the most obvious question would be, have you ever been married?
I've always followed in the footsteps of Warren Beatty before he met Annette Bening. For many, many years, he explained when people asked him whether he was going to get married, he would say, I swore to myself I would never make the same mistake once. My attitude,
that's a good line.
My attitude has been similar. Now, at the same time, in many ways, my relationship with Violet, my beloved, is profoundly closer than any marriage I've ever seen. It's just we've not formalized it because there was no purpose in involving either the church or the state into our bedroom. And there was a profound desire on each of our parts not to end up making a contract with one another with no escape clause, because to do so would be to deny each of us responsibility for maintaining our status as our partner's best option. See, the worst part about committed long-term relationships is that most people get into committed long-term relationships during the infatuation phase of a relationship. The first brief period during which everything about your partner is fantastic. They're flawless. You can see no wrong in them because your brain chemistry has altered. It's as though you have drugged yourself. And you suddenly see the object of your enthusiasm as being perfect. And even their most annoying traits, even things that will eventually drive you crazy, at the time you think are endearing and charming. Because during the infatuation phase that lasts somewhere between, 45 minutes and 18 months on average, sometimes can go a little longer than that, particularly if the relationship never gets the opportunity to be a full-time relationship. For example, if you're in love with someone, quote-unquote, if you're infatuated with someone who's unavailable, then you can stay infatuated for a long time. But if you have an unrestricted access to your beloved during this infatuation phase, the infatuation chemistry tends to run out on the outside at about 2 years. after which you begin to see them for the person they actually are, without any obstruction caused by your psychologically pumping them up. And so when you start to see your partner for who they are, you're usually already into a committed, long-term, and nominally exclusive relationship. So when you no longer see your partner as flawless, you've already possibly even committed, married, and even have a child, or one on the way, when your enthusiasm begins to run out. And from my perspective, making a lifelong commitment based on short-lived emotions is madness. If I signed a contract with you, Mr. Allen, right after we'd both done a bunch of ecstasy, the courts would throw out the contract because we weren't in our sound mind. But if I got married to someone that I met in Vegas 3 days ago, I was swept off my feet, thought she was the coolest thing in the world. Maybe even we dated for a couple of months. We spent all our time together. We were both on a nonstop rush of being with someone who seemed so perfect. Now we get married. We're still getting married while our brains are bedazzled by the chemistry, the hormonal chemistry of fresh new infatuation. And so a year and a half or 2 years later, when we start to see the other person for who they actually are, odds are pretty good. They're not the person we imagined that they were. And the things that didn't quite drive us crazy before we found them amusing become irritating. And the things that we didn't get enough of from them during the infatuation when we were happy with what we were getting suddenly start to become more significant and more substantial. I generally like to describe it as the two eyes, which are intensity and intimacy. And if you think about them on a sliding scale, as though they were two levers you would use to control the bass response on your old-style stereo, where 10 is maximum and 1 is minimum. When you meet someone brand new and they're really cool and they seem into you, the intensity goes right up to 100%. It goes up to 11. Suddenly, this person consumes your brain. You met this girl. You might go home, spend 10 hours on the phone with her till morning, realize you have to go to work or school, spend the whole day a zombie, come back home, just about to climb into bed, the phone rings and it's her, and you find yourself talking to her for another 12 hours because your brain chemistry pumps you up like speed because you're so enthusiastic. And when the intensity is super high, it usually comes along with the intimacy being incredibly low. You see, you really don't know anything about this person. You meet them at a party, you meet them wherever. You have the feeling of 10 on your intensity scale and 1 on the intimacy scale. And as you grow to know them better, the intimacy scale starts to grow. You learn more about what every part of them tastes like, what their breath is like when they wake up in the morning, whether they're slobs at home or whether they're tidy, whatever. As you learn these things about them, the intimacy scale climbs up, gets up to 3, maybe 4, at which point, as long as you're still infatuated with them, it never gets above about 4, about 40%, because your brain is unprepared to resolve anything more than that. It doesn't want to look any more deeply. Meanwhile, as the relationship goes on, the intensity begins to drop. You're no longer jumping out of the car to go and say hello to them when you see them. You start to be more comfortable with it, more expectant, and the intensity starts to drop until it gets to about a 6, at which point you're very comfortable. And then only after the infatuation wears off, very quickly, the intensity begins to drop towards 1. And the intimacy begins to climb towards 10. And after a little while, it starts to be offset. So you find that most of the time when you're in bed with this girl, you're just sleeping. most of the time when you spend with her, you're talking about things or you're ignoring each other and watching TV or reading papers, just happy to know you're in the room with one another because you feel secure and comfortable, but there's no intensity. And after a long enough time, when there's zero intensity and absolute intimacy, you know everything about your partner, she knows everything about you, you are completely bored whether you realize it or not. You've fallen into the realm of complacency. And what happens is your brain stops looking at her as a sexual creature, her brain stops looking at you as a sexual creature, and you become as siblings. You become as though you're brother and sister. There's no longer any drive towards one another. But at the same time, you don't want to be separated because there's fear of separation anxiety, fear of the loss of that comfort and security. So the only ways I have ever found to keep the intensity high so that it doesn't crater are to either involve, as my dear friend Nina, whose birthday is tomorrow and who I know you interviewed a little while ago, she explains the reason for BDSM and the stuff that she and Ira Ernst, her husband, are into, is because it's all about intensity. The power exchange games are all about keeping things intense. Because a traditional best friend relationship or brother-sister relationship with your partner tends to be one in which sex seems unnatural and kind of creepy. The other option is opening the relationship. Now, openness in a relationship doesn't really mean having anything to do with screwing around on each other. Openness has to do with the communication. An open relationship is one where both parties are prepared to be absolutely open with one another. I'll tell you an interesting thing. When people meet Violet and me together, they always presume two things, which are kind of interesting. The first one is they presume we've only been together for a very brief while because we're so clearly crazy about each other. We've actually been together for 6 years. The second thing they notice that's conspicuous is that neither of us ever looks around to see if the other is there before we make a comment. There's never a case of my saying something to someone which I wouldn't say to them if my beloved were within earshot. In fact, each of us is exactly the same, whether we're together or separate. So, at the end of the day, Violet and I are completely comfortable with each other because we are best friends, which makes her suitable, in my opinion, to be my partner in my life. But at the same time, I'm also totally turned on by her, and our sex is fantastic. And she never presumes of me that I'm going to expect her to wait on me as far as sex goes, nor that I'm even going to be happy with her if she's not out at least auditioning other guys to see whether or not they can make her happy sexually. We have a relationship that maintains its intensity because every single day, each one of us knows the other would have no trouble whatsoever finding someplace else to sleep. Violet is a very beautiful girl. She's a porn star in her own right, very well established. She's quite stunning. And if Violet wanted to find someone to take her home, it might take her 5 minutes out on the city street. Now, me, I'm a pretty established player, and I'm very good at disarming women and getting them comfortable and making them happy and making them feel good. So it might take me a whole hour to find someone new to take me home.
Well, let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
Do you ever believe that a man should engage in a platonic friendship with a woman?
That's a really great question. I don't think I've actually been asked that in many years. Let me say, if I ever met a guy who turned me on, I'd be happy to go to bed with him. But in my 42 years, I haven't yet. I'm not looking for a guy that turns me on, but I have met lots of guys who were gay and interested, but none of them ever turned me on. So I've not gone there. By the same token, I can be great friends with these guys, despite the fact we're not having sex. Now, there are some women that I just have no interest in sexually. They're just not my type. They're not my size or shape, not my style. Whatever it is about them, I don't find them attractive, but I can still be friends with them. In fact, I can be close friends with them. So yes, in that context, platonic relationships make perfect sense. Then again, there are some women that I'm into, but don't see me as sexy in that way. And that's fine too, because I don't mind the energizing feeling of being around someone I'm attracted to, even if it's not going to turn into our going to bed together. If I enjoy them as a person, then we'll still be friends. But I would never have set it up as a platonic friendship. And by the same token, let's say I met you and your wife someplace, and your wife was yummy, but it was clear you were not in an exclusive, that you were in an exclusive relationship. Then I would recognize that even though your wife was yummy, I would, in my mind, throw a switch that made her into my sister. And I would treat her as though sexual chemistry was not a possibility, so that I could maintain a strictly platonic friendship. In other words, it's easy for me to have a platonic friendship with a woman if I'm not into her, or if I've forced myself not to be into her. Mm-hmm. It's slightly more challenging to be in a platonic relationship with a girl that I'm into who is not into me. But it's possible. But I never go out of my way to start a platonic relationship. I presume that every relationship is not going to be a just friends relationship. It's going to be a friends relationship. And a big part of all my friends' relationships with people I'm turned on by is that I'm very clear that I'm turned on by them. And I'm very clear that I'd like to offer myself to them with a no strings attached basis, because it would be a joyful thing for me to enjoy them with them enjoying me. But it doesn't really matter. Generally speaking, I presume on a long enough timeline, I will sleep with every girl I'm friends with. And generally speaking, they recognize this is true. So it's really just a question of how soon they can make themselves available.
Now, what is cultural misogyny?
Oh, thank you very much. That's a term I haven't heard in a long time. I know I used it on one of my my own sheets, but let me put it to you this way. I'm going to give you a paradigmatic frame, and I want you to think about this very carefully, all right? In our society, all women are divided into two camps. Okay, I'm going to ask you to help me find the word to describe each camp. On the one hand, we have a girl who does exactly as she chooses. She leads her own life by her own rules, without concern for social mores, without concern for her parents haranguing her about getting married or settling down. Perhaps she's a news anchor woman, or perhaps she's an engineer, or she's doing whatever it is with her life that she wants to do, movie starlet, whatever. She's doing what she wants to do, and she's not met anyone that makes her want to, quote-unquote, settle down and resign herself to a traditional life. But at the same time, she's also not interested in living in celibacy. So she is sexually active with whomever suits her needs, whomever appeals to her. She goes to bed with someone because she finds him hot, she finds him amusing, she'd like him to like her, she's got nothing better to do. Okay? Her reasons for going to bed with someone are because it suits her. And the general population, on average, speaks about women like that, says, she gives herself away for nothing. She has no self-respect. And there's a nasty four-letter epithet that's often thrown around at women who are seen to be, quote-unquote, giving themselves away for nothing. Okay? Can you tell me what that four-letter word is? It's often used to describe a woman who makes her own choices about who she goes to bed with.
I assume you're referring to the term slut.
You got it. So, starting with the idea that we define a woman as a slut, if she's doing what she wants for her own reasons, we say she has no self-respect because she gives herself away for nothing. And now we say, on the other side, we have a different kind of woman. This is a woman who has self-respect. She would never give herself away for nothing. She always charges for it. Now, we also have a word for a woman who charges for it. Okay. Can I get an example of that word from you? There's lots to choose from.
There's a lot to choose from. But I'll let you go ahead and say the most popular one.
Let's just say prostitute, because it's very politically correct. But in fact, there are two types of prostitutes in our society. One that is the low status whore, who we'll refer to as a hoe, because it's cute. Okay? A hoe is a girl who says, well, gee, he bought me jewels, he bought me plane tickets, he took me on trips, he took me to Aspen, he gave me a bunch of cocaine, he paid for the limousine, he bought tickets to see cats, he got my kids into a better school, or he paid my rent, or maybe he gave me $500. But for whatever reason, she knows she's bringing in, so it's okay that she's putting out. That's the low-status hoe, the one who recognizes that I'm getting paid, so I'm receiving security from a man, whether it's security in the form of immediate payment or the promise of long-term payment. I'm going to be with you forever, baby. But still, that category is stigmatized. Women don't want to be thought of in that category. They want to be thought of as noble and honorable and appropriate. So now they want to transfer themselves. They need to escalate, elevate their game. They want to change from being a hoe, or even appearing like a hoe, and maybe they've never wanted to appear like a hoe. Instead, they had always gone for the big league. They want to be able to suggest to men that their sexuality is so great, so high profile, so high post, that if a man wants to get any part of that, he's got to make a lifelong commitment. He's got to sign a contract with them that he guarantees that he will provide for them security and for support for them and their offspring, which I suppose he'll presume will be his own, for the remainder of her life. And if he's prepared to do this, to hire her as his contracted whore, she'll be prepared, at least publicly, not to make available her sexuality to anyone else, and at least publicly make it available to him. So if she can find a man who's prepared to offer her a lifelong commitment in which he's prepared to support her, forswearing all others, then she will make this contract with him, and she becomes a high-status whore. And there's actually a nasty four-letter word to describe this sort of woman as well. Can you come up with it?
Wife.
You got it. Now, we don't think about this a lot. We don't talk about this a lot. But it's important to remember that when a little girl, a young woman, is being raised, her mother tells her, you mustn't ever be a slut. Nothing is worse than a slut. A slut is the worst thing you can possibly be. And I'll remind you of this, because when a man calls a woman a slut, it means she's having sex with more people than I want her to. Okay? If it's your wife and she's having sex with the gardener, she's a slut. If it's some girl you know and would like to get with, but she's not having sex with you, she's having sex with someone else, she's a slut. But when you call a woman a slut, it stings for a moment, but really it means she's just not going to sleep with you. When a woman calls a woman a slut, them's fighting words. When a woman calls a woman a slut, it means you are betraying your gender. You're giving away something that I need to charge for in order to ensure my security and the security of my children. So in essence, a slut is like a union scab, completely hated by those within the union because she makes it impossible for them to be able to tell their client that they are unable to have the services they need unless they're prepared to pay at the rate that the union wants.
Let me ask you, I hate to interrupt you, but let me ask you, have you seen this movie called Chasing Amy?
Yeah, years ago. That was a Smith movie, Kevin Smith movie, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I thought that was a good movie and very realistic because Ben Affleck, he plays a guy who admittedly cannot handle, and for those who haven't seen it, I'm giving a spoiler warning. I'm giving a plot line, revealing a plot line here, but to refresh your memory, Johnny, Ben Affleck, he pursued this woman that initially was presented herself as a lesbian, but she really wasn't. She was just hurt that men had, you know, not treated her right. So she starts seeing women. He broke through that, got into a relationship with her. Then he goes to like a 7-Eleven store or whatever, and runs into two guys who went to high school with this woman. And they're like, oh, man, she's a freak, dude. She used to do threesomes, foursomes. She used to suck any guy's dick. And he cannot handle the fact that she had a promiscuous past. And I would say in my experience, not all guys, but definitely a good number of them cannot handle dating a woman who has a highly promiscuous past. So I guess my question to you is, how would you teach a man, since you don't seem to have any problem whatsoever with a woman's level of number of partners and level of promiscuity, how would you help a man control his feelings of jealousy, being territorial, being possessive? If some guy came to you and said, hey, I'm just this naturally jealous type cat, I cannot handle knowing that, you know, a future girlfriend of mine has slept with, you know, 50 guys, what would you tell him to help him get over that?
Okay. First thing I would tell him, and this is really significant, is that jealousy isn't an innate emotion. It's a compound emotion. Jealousy is the sensation of the fear of pain and the fear of the feeling of loss. And jealousy manifests itself as the voice of your ego speaking inside your head and saying, if your beloved had the choice, she wouldn't choose you. So if you truly believe this, if you truly believe that if your beloved had the choice, she wouldn't choose you, you've got two ways to go about it. You can either decide you want to put her in a box with a lock on the door to make sure she does not have the choice. In other words, you want to remove her ability to choose so that you can feel confident that you won't lose her. Or you can recognize that if you truly love this person, their welfare, their psychological and emotional and physical well-being, their sense of joy and happiness is intrinsic to your own. You need for them to feel whole and alive and vibrant and empowered in order to feel well yourself because you love them. And you think, wow, if my beloved has the choice and she's a reasonable person, if I'm what she needs, she's going to choose me. And if I'm not what she needs, what kind of a terrible person would I be to chain up someone I love to prevent them from finding happiness to suit myself? Because all that will happen is I'll watch them wilt and suffer until they find a way to escape, all the while my world crumbling around me psychologically because I know I'm not getting the sensation of joy I would get from my beloved's feeling fulfilled. So the simple answer is, once you recognize that if you truly love someone, you can't own them. I'm not just talking about in the sense of abolition. I'm talking about it is possible to own a person's emotions. You can't make another person love you. You can't make another person feel anything in particular. Other people will respond to things as they do. All you can do, the best you can do for anyone is encourage them to be happy. encourage them to do the things that make them feel joyful and alive. So by encouraging your beloved to do what she needs to do, you actually encourage her to recognize that more than anything else, she gets affirmative, loving, respectful appreciation and acceptance from you. And those things are so critical and hard to find for most women that when you open the door, very few will go far. I like to use this metaphor. Alan, have you ever had a cat?
Cat? No, I hate cats.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm a dog man.
Fair enough. If you had had a cat and you brought the cat home, something you would have discovered would be the moment you leave the front door open, boom, the cat runs out. If the cat runs out and disappears under the porch or something, you would panic. You go, oh, Christ, what's going to happen now? I've lost him. He's gone. He's never going to come back, whatever. And then after you worried and stressed and got all uptight, a few hours later, he'd come walking back in. And you'd look at the cat and you'd say, oh, don't ever do that again. You scared me half to death. The cat, of course, doesn't have any idea what you're talking about. The cat does its thing. And then the next time you leave the door open, even just an inch, the cat rushes out. And then a few hours later, the cat comes back. And you realize the cat's going out to explore and coming back because it knows where home is. And then after a few weeks, you get to the point where you're walking out the door, you open the door, you look at the cat, you say, are you coming or what? And the same thing is true in a loving relationship. When you recognize that people will make their own choices based on what pleases them most or frightens or hurts them the least, as long as you ensure you're your partner's best option, or at least in her top options, the likelihood that she'll return is tremendously high because it costs her nothing to return. She's showered with appreciation, affection, acceptance, tolerance, value at no cost because she doesn't need to pay anything. You offer her these things because of the person she is. And by the same token, she will radiate back at you all of those same critical things, as well as approval and affirmation, things that men need, because that's the nature of the male-female dynamic. Women crave security, and men crave approval. And there's no more wonderful approval than having your beloved, when you've opened the cage and said, you're free, come back.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I interviewed this guy on the show named Richard Milner. He wrote this book where he studied black pimps in the mm-hmm. 70s and I want to say early 80s. And it's a very good book. But one thing interesting in there is one of the pimps said, he said one of the biggest misconceptions about being a pimp or about the reputation of a pimp is that we coerce or force our hoes to stay with us. And in the book, I guess he's around one of his hoes, and he asked the hoe in front of the person interviewing, he says, have I ever forced you to stay here? And the woman says, no. He says, you can leave anytime you want to, right? She says, yes, sir. And he looks back at the interview and says, see, he said, I would never, I don't know where the media and society get this. He said, now, there's probably some overly aggressive pimps out there who, the more insecure ones who will try to force. But he said, your top-notch pimps do not force any woman to stay in their stable. And I found that most interesting. Real quick, listeners, if you have a question for my guest, Johnny Soporno, you can call in at 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. Right now, I'm going to take a brief intermission break, but when I get back, I'll have more questions and more conversation with dating coach and seduction guru, Johnny Soporno. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerous Lee.
And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Low One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also let you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindsets is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So the listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it. Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with dating coach and seduction guru Johnny Saporno on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. Again, if you want to call in and ask a question,
Call in 646-478-5710 and press the number 1 to let me know that you want to speak. Otherwise, I'll assume you're just in my phone queue listening. Well, speak of the devil. I have a caller, area code 626. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Johnny Soporno. What's your question or comment?
Hi, this is Lucifer from the chat. How funny. Speak of the devil and he shows up. My question for Johnny is, with your girlfriend or your wife working in the industry, has she ever or have you ever consented or has she consented with you to sleeping with somebody outside of the industry, just like a normal person that wasn't paying for it?
Yeah, of course.
Right. And how do you feel about that? It doesn't bother you at all?
Okay. That's a good question. I appreciate your asking it, and I'll tell you the simple answer. The simple answer is when Violet hooks up with a guy when she's being paid to do it, it's work. She's not going to have a good time doing it. The chances she's going to get off are maybe 1 in 1,000. There are maybe 2 guys in the porn industry that I know who are, in fact, very talented and skillful and care that Violet gets along with well enough that they can have on-screen sex where she actually gets off. Overwhelmingly, all porno orgasms are faked for women. Now, in all other circumstances, I know that Violet is working. That's what she does for a living. When she hooks up with some guy who actually turns her on, who actually treats her in a way that she likes, who she goes to bed with because she wants to, the chances she's going to get off are fantastically better. I want her to go out and have as much sex as she can with whomever she likes so that, A, I can always feel respected knowing that when she comes back to see me for sex, it's because she wants the quality of sex I give and not because I'm the only option she has. And the second thing that matters to me is I want her to have plenty of opportunity to do things that she wants to do, which might not be similar to things I want. If she's got a long-haired Asian fetish, I'll tell you, nothing I can do is going to make me a long-haired Asian man. I'm never going to be black. If she wants a black guy, go for it. If she wants someone who's going to tie her up and tickle her with a feather, go for it. That's not something I'm particularly interested in. It's not something I do well. But if it's something she wants, I want her to go out and find the best examples of it she can. I consider myself sexually a steakhouse. And I provide what I like to think are some of the best steaks around. So there's never been a shortfall of people who want the steaks at my steakhouse. Violet, of course, always has a table waiting for her. But if you have nothing but steak every single day for the rest of your life, pretty soon steak becomes dog food. Steak becomes food meal. If you don't have the option of pizza, macaroni, turkey, whatever, you stop appreciating the thing you've got, even if it was your very favorite thing ever. After a little while of getting nothing but filet mignon for every meal, you'd be desperate for a cheeseburger. So recognizing that I want her to have the full palette of options so that when she comes back to me, I always feel it's worth it to put in the extra to make sure that her steak is the best I can make it because she's not taking me for granted. I'm not feeling underappreciated. So if she wants some guy who's going to have her climb onto his chest and take a dump, I'm not going to be that guy. But if there's someone it works with, great. This doesn't happen to be one of her fetishes. I was just coming up with something that I knew would be contentious. But why in the world would I want to prevent her from having the satisfaction she would like if I can encourage her and her going out and doing the things she wants to makes her feel happy and overjoyed and thrilled and complete? It would be the same thing as my saying, well, you want to go out and see a football game with your girlfriend? Oh, forget that. I don't want you having a good time unless I'm there. I have to be the source of your happiness. That's crazy. I want her to have a good time doing anything she does. So with a warm heart, I say, do whatever. You want to go to a quilting bee? You want to go to a movie? You want to pull a train for a soccer team that's come to town? You do whatever it is that makes you feel joyful and alive. If it's not something I want you or I'm appropriate to participate in, just knowing you're doing what you want you and having a good time with it will overjoy me. And don't worry about me, honey. If you're not in my restaurant, I'll just flip the sign to say open, and there will no doubt be someone or many people who come in to take me up on my offer. She knows this. I know this. It's tremendously positive. I want her to have the best life she can.
Okay. All right, caller, did that satisfy your question?
Well, yeah. I just wanted to, because I don't really know a lot of people in the porn industry, you know, besides just what you read in magazines, and usually it's not really like an honest perspective, you know, they're putting on something, and to hear from Johnny is pretty cool, like just a different, I don't know, perspective on what really goes on behind, and to see that they're just open and stuff, it's pretty cool. Yeah, so I guess.
Well, thank you for calling in the show. Appreciate your call, and I'm going to move right along to the next call, area code 954. 954, you're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Johnny Soporno. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Alan and Johnny. This is Pussy Monster. And I really don't know much about, you know, Johnny's, you know, methods or anything. I just really know about his, like, ideologies, which I tend to really agree with. And I'd really like him to speak about maybe, like, what is his method that he goes, like, from when he goes in, maybe talks to a girl, what does he do versus what other people do? Also, can you speak about, you know, the importance of just, like, natural conversation with women versus some type of, you know, routine where you wrote it out and you have it memorized?
Okay. Let me first say, I'm from Toronto, Canada, which is where a lot of fairly conspicuous community guys are from, guys like Tyler Durden and Mystery and Cajun and Ten Magnet and Peyton Kane and a whole lot of other guys come from Toronto, because Toronto is one of the hardest markets anywhere. In Toronto, if you walk down the street, you smile at a pretty girl, you can be pretty sure she's going to look away from you at the ground and pretend that she hasn't seen you, or she'll scowl. Because the overwhelming theme in Toronto is do not engage. In fact, if you blindly bump into someone not paying attention and knock them over, you can count on them to say, sorry. Everywhere else in the world, hey, what the fuck are you doing? Watch where you're going. What's wrong with you? In Toronto, sorry. So taking into account where I came from, and also the fact that I'm a couple of years older than Mystery, and, you know, as I say, I'm in my 40s, and I came up during the time when the AIDS scare was huge, and Toronto is also one of the world's most densely populated with homosexual men communities in the world. So having women with whom to have sex was challenging, and getting them to pay attention to you was challenging, and I was interested in sex with women. I just adored and loved women. So the answer to your first question, how did I go about connecting with them? There was no such thing as a routine stack. There was no such thing as a seduction coach when I came up. There was just trial and error, lots and lots of error, and eventually you started to make mental breakthroughs. You started to see what actually started to work. And as you got to appreciate and understand women, you stopped being intimidated by them. And you started realizing that women have a hell of a lot harder time finding a guy than guys do finding girls. As a matter of fact, every man I've ever talked to has said, oh, damn, you know, I wish I was a chick, because if I was a hot chick, I could get laid on the subway. And my response was always the same. You know, you could get laid on the subway now if it didn't matter if you were aroused by your partner. if you don't need to be turned on in order to have a good time, then you can have sex with someone everywhere you are. Just walk up to any guy. And they go, no, you don't understand. I said, sure I do. Men need to be attracted to women in order to want to hook up. Women don't really need to be attracted to a man. They need to be aroused by him in order to want to hook up. Most women I know have met some number of guys who are just gorgeous and boring as soap. And they're so disappointed when they realize that there's nothing to this guy. Then again, I've never been a particularly nice-looking guy, and I've had a ludicrous number of absolutely stellar women who've always been happy to hook up with me and are still happy to hook up with me because they know that what they can get from me is exactly what they're after without any of the unnecessary overhead. Because unlike society, which says a woman who does what she wants to for her own reasons and therefore is bad news, therefore she's a slut, I look at a woman who does whomever she wants to, for whatever reasons she wants to, without concern for social convention, as being a star. That's the kind of woman I want to spend my time with. Someone who doesn't believe that she needs to vend herself to me and doesn't believe she needs to get something from me in order for it to be okay to have sex. So when I meet a woman, or if I'm in a room, I see a woman that's attractive to me, and I think, oh, she's attractive to me. That's a reason to go over and say hello. So I'll look over and I'll say, she's lovely. She doesn't look terribly busy. So I'll walk across the room, absolutely comfortable, not because I'm going over to get her to like me, not because I'm going to go over to see if she's attracted to me. Why in the world would she be attracted to me? I'm not a particularly attractive guy, and she doesn't know me at all. So why in the world do I need her approval? I don't. I don't even need her acceptance. Because I accept and approve of myself. See, I like me. So I walk across the room to find out whether I'm going to like her. Because I'm complete as me. I don't need her. I don't need her approval. I don't need her acceptance. I don't need her sex. But she's attractive, so I'm going to give her a chance. So with zero approach anxiety, I walk across the room and I say my absolutely brilliant, fantastic, classic pickup line. I say, hey, I'm Johnny. What's your name? Now, I don't recommend you use this unless your name is Johnny. But you can probably find a way to modify it so it suits you better. But the whole of my game begins with my walking up to someone and saying, hey, I'm Johnny. What's your name? And they usually tell me. And then I will say, whatever's on my mind. Because I'm actually not there to get anything from them. I'm giving them an audience. I'm giving them a chance to demonstrate that they're fun and sweet and cool. And if they do, if I find 5 minutes into talking to them that I'm still interested in what they've got to say, I'll take them home with me. It's a pretty easy step, except I got to be honest, at this point in my life, to get 5 minutes of conversation from some beautiful young thing where I'm actually interested in what she's got to say is pretty challenging. But if I'm interested in what she's got to say, something wonderful happens. My being sincerely interested makes me compellingly attractive. The fact that I am a secure, confident, self-possessed, masculine male, paying attention to what she's got to say, actively involving her in a conversation where she's getting to talk about the things that she's interested about, makes me compelling. And the longer we talk, the more attractive I become. So generally speaking, after 5 minutes, I think, okay, this girl's pretty cool. After 10 minutes, I say, you know, this is not a place for the likes of us. This is totally inappropriate. What are a couple of dazzling urbanites like us doing in a rustic rural setting like this? I might say this in the hippest bar in Manhattan. Partly it's to see whether she gets the joke. Generally, I'm pretty confident by the point I use that line that she will. So she might giggle and say, I haven't the foggiest idea. I say, come on, let's get out of here. This isn't a place for us. It's the simplest, quote-unquote, game in the world. I'm actually walking over, completely comfortable in me, and if she's an evil bitch to me, and I walk over, she says, what do you want, fat old man? I say, whoa, hey, honey, I don't know who pissed in your Cheerios, but it wasn't me. I'm just being friendly. So let's start this again. Hey, I'm Johnny. What's your name? And usually she'll realize that she's just been an awful bitch at me. And she'll suddenly, sheepishly, become quite charming. But if she doesn't, if for whatever reason she has a hyper-exaggerated sense of entitlement, or she's just got a bug up her ass for whatever reason, and she's still unpleasant, I'll say, okay, have a better one. And I'll walk away, having thought to myself, my God, she was so attractive until I got to know her. And then I realized she wasn't attractive at all. Boy, did I just save myself a lot of time.
Okay, caller, was that a satisfactory answer to your question?
Yeah, that was actually a pretty good answer to the question. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Next caller, area code 703, and now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Johnny Saporno. What's your question or comment?
What up, Alan? This is the Wolf Howls from the Direct Method Forum.
What's up, Wolf Howls?
I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Could you do that one again?
Yes, this is the Wolf Howls from the Direct Method Forum.
Ah, okay, great.
Yeah, and I had a question for you, Johnny. I'm a believer in polygamous dating or whatever you call it.
Polyamorous?
I was wondering, yeah, polyamorous, yeah. And I was wondering, what would you could say is your biggest point to a lot of people who might argue with it? Because I have people like to argue with me about it. Like, oh, you know, it's too complicated, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's the biggest point to them, you would say?
Let me stop. Let me back up just a stop. Let me make sure I understand your question. You're saying, how would I respond to a person who's telling me that my model of living doesn't work, or they're telling me that my model of living wouldn't work for them?
It just wouldn't work. Yeah, I'd say that's the question.
Okay. Well, if a person tells me that what I'm doing wouldn't work, then usually I giggle and I look at the one or two girls I'm with and they giggle. And they'll usually do something like kiss me at once or whatever. I mean, seriously, if a person is unable to free their mind and recognize there are alternatives to what they've had formulaically codified into their mind, then what am I going to do? I don't push on ropes. When a person is ready, they come looking for someone who can guide them. I don't have any trouble finding people who are looking for guidance. I'm not about to tell a person who has shown up at my door to tell me I'm wrong. I don't have any reason to invest any energy in that person. I'll say, whatever, it's not got anything to do with me what you feel. My life works really well. Sometimes they'll say, I'd love to do what you do, Johnny, but it wouldn't work for me. And usually I say, is the problem one of insecurity? Is the problem one of where if you feel you don't own the woman, that you can't trust that she's going to return, that if you let her off her leash, you're not sure she's going to come back? And they usually say, no, I'm not worried about that. I say, okay, so it's not a self-confidence issue. What is it? They say, well, it's just if I saw her with another guy, it would make me feel terrible. I say, okay, I want you to think about that. If you saw her out with a bunch of girlfriends, would that make you feel terrible? Are you jealous of her having a good time with other people or only having a good time where it involves their cock? And they'll usually giggle and say, well, only if it involves their cock. I say, okay, is it because you're not confident enough in your own cock? Are you convinced that if she has someone else's, she's going to lose interest in yours? Sometimes they'll say, well, actually, kind of. I say, in that case, you need to spend more time communicating with her and maybe looking into some sex lessons, some sex books, manuals. Nina Hartley's book is excellent. There's lots of terrific ways you can learn to do all sorts of wonderful things. And if your cock isn't what she wants, I'll bet you anything between your fingers, toys and your mouth, you can absolutely thrill her. The guys go, wow. I say, so stop defeating yourself in advance. Stop saying you couldn't do this, because even for myself, the first time I invited a woman I was involved in a passionate love affair with to go and do something without me with another guy, she left and the voice of my ego shouted at me and said, you're an idiot, she's never coming back. And I said, I'm going to try this. I'm confident this makes sense. I do not want to force her to live in bondage. I want her to choose to come back to me. My ego stabbed at me for hours. And then she came back in the door. And she threw her arms around me and told me how wonderful it was to be back with me and how the guy seemed so cool but was a terrible lay, selfish in bed, not any good, and how horny she was and needed for me to take care of her needs, which I did. And from that point on, I pretty much haven't ever felt jealousy.
Oh, wow.
But in the same way as your cat has to run out, come back, run out, come back, then you get to the point where you go, wow, I've really been worrying for nothing. Because worry is what we do when there's nothing we can do. Because we hate not being able to do anything. So teaching yourself to just relax, let things play out. Tremendously empowering.
Okay, caller, Wolf Owls, did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, brother,
Thank
for
you.
Calling in. Much appreciated. So, Johnny, I got to ask you, and I already know the answer, but when you deal with women, you're always upfront and straightforwardly honest with them about your desires, interests, and intentions, right?
Let me answer that. Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, to put it the right way, I look at direct versus indirect in this context. A person uses indirect if they believe they have to get in there under the radar. Because if the girl knew what they were after, she would diss them like a roach. And my attitude is, I'm pretty fucking great. If a girl can't recognize this about me, just based on my confidence and the fact that I don't look up to her, imagining I need to knock her down a peg through negging or whatever other techniques to try and make her feel off kilter, but rather, I already know I'm good enough. Then she'll look at me like a peer, or maybe even like someone she needs to look up to. And then, by giving her the opportunity to be herself, accepting her, and letting her demonstrate who she is, overwhelmingly, she looks to me as someone totally cool and worth getting to know. And again, it's not about whether or not she's attracted to me. It's whether or not she's interested in my paying attention to her. Because what arouses a woman is tremendously different than what attracts a woman. What gets a girl hot and bothered is different from every girl to every girl. But boy, oh boy, it's easy to get them to help you understand what they're about and to sexualize and escalate your flirting to the point where you're talking about sex in very, very little time. I'm not talking about using NLP patterning and trying to sneak seductive terms in there. I am so direct with women, I'll smile at them and tell them the first few minutes of flirting and chatting, as soon as I feel the opportunity is right, as soon as I realize how this evening is going to play out, I look at a girl smiling, and I smile at her, and I go, wow. And she'll say, what? And I'll just say, I just had a beautiful vision in my mind of what you're going to look like, resplendently decorated with my fresh semen, smiling up at me in your post-orgasmic ecstasy. And they go, what? And it used to be 10, 15, 20 years ago, before semen facials were so commonplace that everyone expected them, some girls would go, oh, my God, you want to do what? And I say, well, don't worry about it, hon. I'm never, ever going to force anything like this on you. But if you ever want to know how to really tweak my brain and make me super excited and happy, inviting me to decorate your beautiful face with my aesthetic love gravy is definitely going to do it for me. And they
well,
might
Johnny,
go, oh, my God.
I got you to bless my listening audience. I don't know if you've listened to my show before, but I always have my guests. You're familiar with the title of my book, Mo 1. I want you to stretch out the O's and give me a good Mo 1.
I can do that for you. Mo 1.
Mo 1.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mo 1.
You're up front, straight forward.
Mo 1.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mo 1. Listeners, I'm going to take my final intermission break of the night, but if you have a last-minute quick question, quick comment, please call in 646-478-5710. I'll be right back.
Do you want to let loose? Yep. Do you want to vent on the issues all the time? Do you want to express your view? Yes, sir. Then sound off. This is your host, Harold L., okay, inviting you to join me on Blog Talk Radio with the Sound Off Now show. That's what's up. Real life, real issues, real talk, okay, uncensored. Join me on the SON Network Monday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern for some of the most controversial issues and forums as we simply sound off. I'm there. Come join us and sound off now, where nothing is off limits. That's what's up. www.blogtalkradio.com/sound-off-now.
Mo 1.
I never really looked at myself as a quote-unquote bad boy, at least not in all regards. I mean, I ain't never robbed no bank, and I ain't never skipped 2 weeks of school. So in terms of just various facets of my behavior, I wouldn't necessarily call myself that. But yeah, when it comes to sex, I've definitely been that guy.
Because
I will push a woman's boundaries.
You know what? To be honest with you, I think most women are waiting for a man to do that. Most women want a man to do that. Most women that are coming up in the day and age where a woman is supposed to be the good girl has this idea that a man is going to bring that out of her, and she's hoping that he will. Unfortunately, a lot of men, I won't say a lot of men, but some men have no idea what they're doing. And so they're not able to get that out of her. And then everybody's frustrated. She's frustrated. He's frustrated. Nobody knows why it's not working. But women are like, go ahead. Like, blindfold her and just take her wherever you want to take her. She's waiting for a man to command that. So she says she can't, you know, in some cases, be that free to say, okay, blindfold me and take me wherever you want to take me. And it's because in some way she's afraid of where you might take her. You know, depending on what the relationship is like with him and how much she trusts him. And in other cases, she just doesn't know how to say that herself.
No woman wants a man that can't lay it down in the bedroom. Period. And, you know, women, we go through this, oh, I want to be held and I want to cuddle and I want to talk. Yeah, we want to do all of that. But when it comes down to it, we want to be climbing off the ceiling just like everybody else does.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with dating coach and seduction guru Johnny Saporno on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. this episode, and it has been a most interesting conversation with my special guest, world-renowned dating coach and seduction guru, Johnny Saporno, sharing his philosophies and principles with my listening audience. Now, let me ask you, Johnny, what about children being in the picture? Can two polyamorous couple, can they bring up children without any type of, you know, undesirable repercussions or consequences?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'll take it even further. Overwhelmingly, I watch couples where the love is drained out, the sexual love is drained out. They've become, as I say, as siblings. And they're both feeling underappreciated, and they're both feeling stagnating and trapped and underserved, but they've already got kids. And so they'll stupidly decide, well, I'm going to stick it out because I have to. We will stay together for the sake of the children. But children are tremendously intuitive. Children can tell when their parents are not happy with one another. And so by keeping a relationship together, quote unquote, for your kids, you're actually being tremendously destructive to them. The best thing anyone can give to a child is a happy home. And the next best thing, which is also the very, very least anyone is obligated to give to a kid, is no exposure to an unhappy home. So if you can't make a go of it so that you've got a happy home, you need to get out. You need to comfortably and ideally early negotiate an arrangement whereby you can both take care of, love, cherish, share responsibilities for, or whatever it is you feel you can do, so that the kids have not one happy home they can live in, or rather, so they have not one unhappy home they can live in, but one or more happy homes in which they feel welcomed and delighted. Because if you're in a relationship with someone where you're not happy and you're just using up the space they could otherwise have someone that would make them happy in, you're doing them no service at all. Much better to free their future so they can find the love they need and be happy. And this also reflects down on the kids. Now, in a relationship that doesn't need to break up because both partners believe that it's possible and, in fact, easy to love multiple people at the same time. It might not be easy or even possible to be infatuated with multiple people at the same time. But as I say, infatuation wears out pretty quickly. And what keeps people together should be genuine love. The love that keeps a relationship together is kind of like, you've probably never thought about this before, but people say you've got to work at a relationship. You've got to work at a marriage. And my attitude is, that's crazy talk. I've never had to work at a friendship. Friendships work on their own. I've never had to put any work into being able to be friends with anyone. And I've never had to put any work into my passionately loving relationship with Violet, who's one of my very best friends of my entire life. Our relationship works because it does. Now, neither Violet or I are ever going to have kids, at least not together. And
do you have any kids?
But I have a whole bunch of, I have half a dozen boys and a girl from a lifetime of picking up strays. But I'll leave that alone for the moment. I have raised a lot of kids. I have raised a lot of kids from adolescence or even pre-adolescence to full-grown adulthood. I am tremendously proud of all of them. And I love them all very, very dearly. They're kids to me, despite the fact that I never actually impregnated any of their mothers.
Oh.
Now, it's fine. I didn't miss it. I went through the motions of impregnating lots of women. I'd be happy not to accomplish it. It's all good. Now, my assumed kids, my assumed illegitimate kids are fantastic. And I've learned all sorts of things from them and taught all sorts of things to them. And that's great. But I don't have the attention to pay attention to an infant or a small child. Small children are not actually interesting. But nevertheless, they need attention. And since I know I cannot give attention to something just because it needs attention, in other words, to pay attention to my 2-year-old, he'd pretty much have to be on fire. And then I'd only pay attention to him until I got the fire out. And kids need more than that from their father, so I wouldn't do that. So I opted not to have kids from infancy. Now
leaving
that alone...
Well, let me ask you this question. You seem to have a lot of ideal relationships with women, but I just feel compelled to ask you this. When was the last time, whether it was 5 years ago or 25 years ago, when was the last time a woman left you feeling hurt, lied to, misled, and or manipulated? And if so, how did you handle it?
It's 1994. It was 2004.
2004.
It was a beautiful school teacher, stunning, really, who was very playful and very positive. She had shown up at my door, having been introduced by a friend who said to her, "You're going to love Johnny, and you're going to love his girlfriends, you're going to love all their playmates." And she did, and she became very quickly integrated into our lifestyles, and she went to bed with everybody she was interested in, and she had a blast. She was sexy and playful and all the things you'd want her to be. And then quietly, a hidden side of her that none of us saw coming snuck out, and she became a pathological liar. And she started to have paranoid schizophrenic tendencies. And then she started to act upon fantasies that she was having of paranoid nature and became destructive and started telling stories between the girls and the other people involved and fucking shit up just for the sake of it, for no personal gain. And then she not only ditched me, but she was, at this point, she'd stopped being a school teacher and she'd become an exotic dancer, and she was dancing in a club that I had taken her to, where I was very well known, and where it was a strip club where I was very well known. And she told them a bunch of really heinous and awful things about me so that I would not be permitted to come into the club. Now, I'm friends with the owner of the club, who said to me, "Johnny, here's my problem. I don't believe what she's saying at all. But all the girls here are freelancers, and they need to believe the club has their back. So I cannot look to this girl and say, 'I don't believe you, I believe the customer over you.'" And I said, "I get it. It sucks, but there it is." So I moved away from staying kind of that club, and she stayed there for about a year. And I felt the sting of knowing that all sorts of girlfriends of mine, playmates and recurring playmates and exotic dancers who were porn stars who would visit my town and would be dancing at that club, and I couldn't go visit them because I had been blacklisted because of a bunch of pernicious bullshit that this girl had spread.
Wow.
Finally, she moved back to Montreal, and everything got cleared up. And I
tell
my
listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web.
Oh, wow. I don't actually do anything on the World Wide Web. They're kind of stuck. No, I'm joking. if you go to johnnysoporno.com, or you look up Johnny Soporno on Facebook, or the Worthy Playboy Institute, just go to Google. You'll find about 85,000 pages and links. I have a 6-hour-long, absolutely free to download, to share, philosophical explanation video called Seductive Reasoning, which you can find at seductivereasoning.com, which you can also find through the Worthy Playboy page or through Johnny Soporno. And I strongly encourage you to check it out. It will really change the way you look at things, I hope for the better. About 1 million people now have downloaded it between my site and 6 or so repeater sites internationally. And even though I don't make a dollar off of it, I am absolutely thrilled, because in truth, it doesn't cost me anything to share it. Everyone gets to be a little bit happier at no cost to me. Because the most important thing about this game we play, and the game I play has nothing to do with picking up girls, it's the game of life. The way I live so well is I understand most of all that in order for me to win, nobody has to lose. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much more fun.
Well, Johnny, I've had a great time listening to you and having you as a guest. And I'm sure as the months go by, I'll have you on again to drop some more knowledge and wisdom. Thank you so much. Listeners, go ahead.
I was just saying, it's been an absolute blast. I've been delighted. I'm sorry that I didn't get to hear more from you, but I appreciate that I was sort of being featured on this. I look forward to getting a chance to talk to you, even if it's just our phone call, you and I, because I've looked into the stuff you've been teaching, and I have a lot of respect for what you say, and it's just been great being on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll surely talk. Listeners, I'll be back again next week, touching on actually some of the same themes from tonight, particularly women's promiscuity. Women and promiscuous behavior will be the topic next Thursday with a guest named Carrie Cohen Hoffman. Until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. I'll see you next week. Take care. Peace.